Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's show. My name is Ryan Levesque, and it's an honor and pleasure to co-host today's episode. Since 1924, Toastmasters International has transformed nearly 8 million lives through its mission of empowering individuals to become more effective communicators and leaders. The organization began over 100 years ago with a single club, and today there are more than 13,800 Toastmasters clubs around the world, attended by 250,000 members from nearly every country on the planet. Right now, you are listening to the organization's only official podcast. My presence here today notwithstanding, the podcast is routinely hosted by one solitary host. I'm proud to call that person my friend and to call myself his former co-host. His name is Greg Gazin. You know him well. Greg, congratulations on carrying the torch to the 300th episode and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It's strange not to be the one opening the podcast.
Yeah, I had to steal that from you today. Greg, 300 episodes. How does it feel?
Feels pretty good, Ryan, but of course, you know that you were there for the first one.
That's true. Well, Greg, not only are you the host of the podcast, but of course, you're an occasional contributor to the Toastmaster magazine. Your latest contribution to the magazine is all about this 300th episode and the impact and history of the podcast. So can you tell us about your latest article? What's it called? When's it coming out? And what's inside?
It's really cool to recognize each milestone. For our 200th episode, there was an article in the magazine where we had a competition, Pitch Your Podcast. You might remember that, Ryan.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So when we reached the 300th episode, I reached out to the good folks at the magazine and was wondering if perhaps they had any suggestions as to what we could do for the 300th episode. Perhaps we could interview somebody from headquarters. And they returned back to me and said, Greg, you know, for the 300th episode, we would like you to write an article and talk about you. And I thought, well, I'm usually the one not being the subject matter person.
Exactly what you like to avoid.
Yeah. And they suggested that I write a little bit about the 300th episode, talk about the podcasts, maybe a little bit how it evolved, how you got into podcasting, some of the things, some of the lessons that you learned along the way. And so this is the 300th episode. And the article is called The Toastmasters Podcast, Reflecting Back, How a Simple Podcasting Project Developed into an Incredible Journey. And that will be in the June 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. And instead of me interviewing someone, it was suggested that perhaps my former co-host, Ryan Levesque, interview me. That's why we're here. And it seems so strange not to do the opening. It seems so strange not being the one on the other side of the mic asking the questions.
Right. Yeah. It's fun to steal your thunder on that. Let's rewind a bit. I'd love for you to share with our listeners the backstory. How did you get into podcasting originally, and how did you find yourself as the voice behind the Toastmasters podcast?
Well, Ryan, I'm probably a little older than I sound. That's why we don't do video. Just kidding. I loved audio for years. In fact, I used to do my own play-by-plays for the Montreal Expos back when I was in school, when I was in college. I didn't have Toastmasters behind me. I was a very quiet, shy, afraid, scared introvert. And so instead of speaking, I used to put together audio-visual presentations. And back then, that meant slides. You remember those carousel slides? I used to use reel-to-reel tape, and I used to cut and splice tape. So that's how my love of audio came about. With respect to podcasting, my background is in technology. I've written many, many articles on gadgets and technology. That's a lot of what I do and what I used to do. And when it came time to do a high performance leadership project for Toastmasters in the Legacy program, I thought, why not do a podcast? So I reached out to our district governor, they now call them directors, and I said, Mona, I said, I want to do a podcast for my high performance leadership project. I want to interview you. What do you think? She goes, Greg, that sounds like a great idea. What's a podcast? When I started out, there were only about maybe 8 or 9,000 podcasts at a time. This is back in 2006. Of course, now there's about 4 or 5 million. That became the birth of my first podcast called Toastcaster. It was originally Toastcaster, a podcast for Toastmasters. It was originally going to be one episode. It then became a district podcast. And then after a while, the district was no longer interested in continuing it. So I rebranded it as Toastcaster Communication and Leadership Learning Lab. A couple of years later, I'm kind of mixing up the timelines, but I believe about 2 years after I started my podcast, I met both you and Bo. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly where we met. Maybe we met online. I can't recall. But I also do recall that your podcast eventually became the Toastmasters podcast. And in 2009, you started the official Toastmasters podcast. And I believe that I met with you guys in, where was it? Was it?
Mashantucket, Connecticut. Yeah, that was the first time we met in person.
Mashantucket, Connecticut. And I helped you along with the episode because I know I was running around gathering guests. And you had me also host a couple of episodes. And then in 2014, I got a call from Bo and said, hey, you know what? We need some help. Are you interested in joining the team? And I remember where you had interviewed me as becoming the new host or one of the hosts of the Toastmasters podcast. And I know that the podcast has done you well and Toastmasters has done you well because you've gone on to bigger and better things. And then a couple of years ago, you decided that you needed to move on. And so now, of course, I'm the host and producer of the Toastmasters podcast.
When you officially came on board, what was that year?
That was 2014. And I'm not sure if that was episode 82 or 83, but I do remember our first episode that we did together. It was, we interviewed Dhananjaya Hediarachi, episode 84. Yes. Yes, I was the one that had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to prepare because he was in Sri Lanka. Of course, you're in Massachusetts. I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Mm-hmm. And I still remember there was torrential rainstorms. It was
like a monsoon or something, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Super. So you've been at this for quite a while, as you shared, doing the Toastcaster first and then Toastmasters podcast, now doing Toastmasters podcast solo. What motivates you to keep going with this?
Well, first of all, I love it. When I first started podcasting, it was all about the audio, the sound, putting together the podcast. And now for me, it's amplifying the voice of the magazine, because that's our raison d'etre for the Toastmasters podcast, is to amplify the words and the stories and the photos of the magazine. And what I find is every month I look forward to reading the articles and reading about the phenomenal things that are going on and all the people that are being featured. Of course, we talk always to the international president, the accredited speakers, the world champion of public speaking, but also just the everyday Toastmasters that are doing some incredible things. So I think for me, being able to meet the people, hear the stories, help them share their stories, that's the thing that excites me the most each time.
And, you know, I say that you're doing this solo, but the truth is you mentioned a few minutes ago, you've got the support of Toastmasters International at your back, and you do this in conjunction with the staff at World's Headquarters. I wonder if you could give the listeners a bit of a peek behind the scenes at what that looks like. What is the collaboration consist of?
Well, we work directly with the good folks at the magazine. So we will receive copies of articles or draft copies of the articles ahead of time. We're also given some suggestions as to who we might be able to interview and what a possible hook is. Of course, they give me the liberty to pretty much interview whoever I want. But of course, always tying it back to the magazine. And sometimes you'll read an article and you're not exactly sure what direction you want to take. And of course, you could always go to ChatGPT and say, what direction I should take. But it's always great for me to focus back and go back to the folks at the magazine. Sometimes I'll actually go back and talk to the authors. Some of the authors are regular contributors to the magazine. Some of the authors are staff at Toastmasters International. And a lot of them are also everyday Toastmasters and other people who contribute. So getting that type of support is very helpful because sometimes you need a little guiding hand sometimes just to help focus. Because again, at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about making sure that the listener has the best experience, that they have a great takeaway, and that there's a connection between the magazine and the episodes that we put out.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned ChatGPT a few moments ago. And as I was anticipating this episode and thinking all that's changed over the past couple of years, artificial intelligence is something that came up for me. Obviously, ChatGPT was around back in 2024, but it's really exploded over the past couple of years. So it made me wonder, what impact has AI had on your workflow and just the whole process of producing this episode?
As far as AI goes for editing, I'm still old school. I'm using Audacity and GarageBand for the most part, editing the WAV files. I haven't looked at moving to a new platform yet. Of course, it takes time to learn how to use it and do it properly. I know, Ryan, that you have moved over to Descript, where it takes the audio, converts it to text. You can edit the text and convert it back to audio, which can be pretty handy. If somebody said Tuesday and it should be Wednesday, you could just get it to convert that. As far as AI, I will occasionally use it to generate questions, although interestingly enough, I tried an experiment one time, and out of about 12 or 13 questions that it gave me that I could potentially use, I think there were two that maybe were of interest to me. What I do use it for is I will use it for the show notes. Going back and listening to the audio and gathering show notes and trying to find the key points and the highlight points can sometimes be very, very time consuming. So I will use it for that. But what I will do is I will train it, because it will give me information or it will give me output. And I'll say, well, I don't like this. I don't like this. I do like this. So I'll say, okay, this is what you gave me. This is what I want, or this is what I finalized. And then so it will learn for next time. So it's allowing me to have more detailed show notes with a lot more information in them. But again, you need to really be careful. AI does hallucinate. In fact, my recent conversation with Joel Schwartzberg in episode 298, and he talks about the generative AI pitfalls, how to spot them and also how to overcome them. So you want to certainly listen to that episode and also check out the article. So I do use AI to a bit. I use it as a little bit of a helper. I don't use it for the mainstream work because I don't feel that it's quite there yet.
Yeah, gotcha. So you just mentioned the episode with Joel Schwartzberg. I wonder about the other 299 or 298 episodes. What are some others that stand out to you when you think back on your body of work here?
There are so many episodes, and I've learned so many things for so many episodes. I think if I have to pick the one that maybe has impacted me the most, or one that might be more memorable, and you probably remember this, I think it was episode 204, or maybe it was 104, our episode where we interviewed Sarah Safari. Sarah had gone up Mount Everest, and she was literally dangling for dear life when the earthquake hit that killed 20,000 people in Kathmandu. And I remember interviewing her. She was a Toastmaster, and she had gone up Everest. And I remember as she retold her story, I had shivers down my spine just listening to what she had gone through. And in fact, I have shivers down my spine now just thinking about it. And also the impact that she had. Again, our podcast is audio only, creating that image in our minds as to what she went through, just having the photo from the cover of the magazine. I think that's one episode that was very, very impactful.
I can totally relate to that, Greg. When I think back to that episode, I don't think of a podcast. There's a movie that plays in my mind because everything was, as you said, just so vivid. The way she described it, I felt like I was right there as on the Khumbu ice falls as the earthquake hit and just chaos descended over Nepal.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Ryan, because there is a Netflix series called Aftershock, Surviving Everest.
Yes, I watched that and it brought me right back to all of our conversation with Sarah.
Yeah. Another episode I think that was very powerful for me was, and you remember this because we've talked about this one extensively, is our interview with Robert Nevarez. There was a magazine article about how he had overcome his fear of public speaking. This article is interesting in two respects. One, it gives an example of how sometimes you can have a conversation, because the article focused on helping his dad, or telling his dad's story about him overcoming his fear of speaking. But then he was sharing with us how he was a former police chief officer, and he had to knock on doors, and he had to share with families something about a tragedy that had just happened. And then I remember, and maybe you remember this better than me, where he had to end up giving either a presentation, or he had to come up and say something. It might have been at the celebration of life, or it might have been at the funeral.
I think it was at a vigil, maybe.
Vigil, yes,
it was. A candlelight vigil.
And he had 15 minutes notice that he had to get up and he had to speak about this. And again, that's another real wow moment.
How about you?
Well, for me, one of the episodes that stands out is actually one that was a vulnerable moment for you. And that was our episode with David Jones, where you shared about a similar experience you had. I wonder if you'd be comfortable sharing a bit about that one.
Yeah, Ryan, this is a tough one. I just looked it up here quickly. It's episode 179. The episode was called Finding Healing Through Service and Leadership. David Jones was talking about this emotional story about how he lost his wife in a car crash. She was a victim of a drunk driver. It was in 2021, and it just happened to be about 3 months after my wife had passed. And I recall him sharing his story, and you and I share a Google Doc in the background. That's where we have our notes, and we have our comments that we go back and forth. And I remember I was so choked up. I just was struggling in the background. And I remember you sending me a quick note saying, "It's okay, Greg." He says, I think you need a moment. Let me take the next question. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It was a tough one, but at the same time, and I think I even mentioned about it in the episode. So it just goes to show how it's so real and it's so impactful. And you may have also recalled that when David was telling the story, he originally told the story, he spent about 10 minutes on the opening question.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You remember that? And we had decided, we were debating, and we thought, okay, he told the story, it was emotional. We just didn't want to interrupt him.
Right.
But then when it was done, we thought, okay, David is a Toastmaster. So we politely suggested that perhaps it might have been just a little too long, and that if he would give that story in maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and he just jumped to it, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have done that at that time.
I remember too. I mean, you and I have spoken over the years about many special moments before the recording and after the recording. I mean, obviously a lot of the good stuff gets captured on the recording itself, but I remember you having a really powerful conversation with David, sharing your experience with him after the recording ended as well.
And not all the episodes were difficult and challenging. Right. One other difficult and challenging one, in fact, I'm always believing that we can learn. In Toastmasters, we learn by doing. And in my other podcast, Toastcaster, I hadn't done a podcast for a few months. We kept the Toastmasters podcast going, but Toastcaster episode 150, it was called The Hardest Speech You'll Ever Have to Give. And I talked about putting together my wife's eulogy. And I remember that. And then I tacked on to the end the actual eulogy, because I believe anything that we do, no matter how difficult and no matter how challenging, is that there's some lessons to be learned from it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. Powerful.
Any others come to mind, Ryan?
There's like a group of episodes that come to mind for me, and that would be the ones that we did at international conventions, including the one in Mashantucket that we talked about where we first met. We haven't done that together, or even when I was still doing the podcast with you. It had been a while since we'd done one, but those were always so fun. We'd go to the convention, we'd set up a table and be interviewing both people who were there at the convention, as speakers, as presenters, or as dignitaries, if you will, as well as just people who are there attending. You'd always hear on the recording the buzz in the background of everybody just networking and enjoying the conference activities and that sort of thing. So those were always fun. They were all also an opportunity to add some extra creativity. We did some live shows there with playing games with people in a ballroom and whatnot. Of course, being there for the international speech contest and getting to interview the winner of that in person. Lots of great memories.
I remember the one we enjoyed with, I can't remember his name now, the clown. Remember?
Oh, Don Colliver.
Yes, yes.
Yes. I, in fact, just thought of him the other day. I came across someone who had a clowning background, and I thought, I know a little something about that.
The one for me that sticks out is recently, I interviewed him twice, Nick Bendel. He was the gentleman who decided that he was going to have 500 lunches with strangers.
Mm. Wow, cool project.
Yeah, we interviewed him back in 2024. I think at that point, I think he was at around 375. I can't remember the exact number. Recently, there was a follow-up with Nick. It was called 500 More Lunches in the magazine. So one of the learnings for me was the power of curiosity. Because that was one of the things that people had noticed is, Greg, you're very, very curious. Mm. And I think that's a really good thing that you can learn. Now, being curious can also be the downside, because one of the editors that I've had, because I've been writing for him for decades, one of these many, many years ago, he said to me, he says, Greg, the problem with you is that you're too interested. Mm. He said to me, he says, I didn't say you're interesting. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. He said, you're too interested. He says, when you speak to someone, you can't share their life story in 750 words or in a 20-minute podcast. You need to sort of focus on one aspect, on one angle and one hook. You know, what's the main key? What's the lead? What's the story? When I asked Nick what was one of the successes with respect to what he does, and it's his nature of being curious. And that's one of the ways that he would get through, because he would reach out to people to have lunch. Right. And they're going, like, kind of a strange thing with no real intention, but to just have a nice lunch and have a nice conversation with them. And he says one of the keys is being curious. Lisa's son, she was the Golden Gavel recipient in 2024, I believe, when she talked about the 8 superpowers. Now, curiosity isn't one of them, but she was talking about, I think one of them was creative. So when I think about that, I think curiosity was really, really, is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a good opportunity to ask you the question I've been wanting to ask you.
Uh-oh.
Before we started recording, you teased something. You said that there's a bad habit that you picked up from me as a result of us working together, and the curiosity is the sort of the flip side of curiosity is reminding me of it. So lay it on me, Greg. What is this bad habit that I've infected you with?
Now, you're making me sound like a bad guy, Ryan. Now, we did talk about things that we learned, because in the article, I talk a little bit about things that I've learned from the guests, because we learn lots of things for the guests. I remember Lauren Parsons, when she became an accredited speaker, I believe it was last year. And one of the things that she shared, one of her concepts was snack on exercise, because sometimes you want to get these exercises in, because I've got all kinds of aches and pains from all kinds of injuries. Mm-hmm. And so now in the morning when I make my coffee, I take a couple of minutes and I do the push-ups against the wall in the kitchen. I have a space area there. You can see a few little fingerprints that are still on the wall. And that's where I get that first exercise in the morning. So I remember sharing that with her again, saying that's one thing that I learned.
Toastmasters podcast life hacks.
Right. And there was no room in the article to share what I learned from you. So again, as a Toastmaster and wanting to be a good evaluator, I did learn a lot from you. Now, I will preamble this with, Ryan is an English major. That's to set the context. So let's just say that your terminology and the words that you used were very eloquent. So you would always be fixing my colloquialisms and my Canadiana, eh?
Those are called colloquialisms, by
colloquialisms.
The way.
Yeah, I have trouble pronouncing that word. But what I also found was that you're very philosophical and very conceptual. So quite often you would preamble questions that you did with maybe giving some philosophical concept, or maybe you would quote, I still remember saying, in quoting Benjamin Franklin, statesman, and you'd pull things from literature. Whereas me, for example, I was just very more direct, right? It's gadget guy, logic, just I would just ask the question. Of course, I've evolved since then. So those are the things that you've done. One of the challenges that I now have, because I picked up from you, is that when someone would be talking, you would go,
There it is. That's right.
And I find myself doing that. And I'm thinking, oh, Ryan, darn.
You're welcome and I'm sorry. Yeah. Or I should say, I'm sorry. It's my Canadian accent.
The positive side of that is that what I did learn from you was that I learned a little bit more about setting up the question. Mm-hmm. So sometimes instead of asking a direct question and you're not sure where someone is going with this, what you would do is you would preamble it with something. Again, you would use a lot of the concepts. You would maybe use a quote. For me now, instead of just saying, how did you prepare for your episode? So for example, I interviewed a gentleman named Ari Siegel recently and his experience on Shark Tank. That is an incredible, incredible story. So instead of saying, well, how did you prepare? I would say something to the effect of, well, okay, this is where you started. Now you're here. Something must have shifted. What happens? So setting up context, setting up more context so that you get a better quality answer. What happens now is...
Oh, I think I know where you're going here. Is this the conversational runway concept that you were starting to mention to me earlier before we started recording?
Yes, that's exactly what it is, Ryan. And of course, I have to credit you with planting the seed. Because what I find is if I ask a specific question, the guest can go in 27 different directions. So what I find is if I first maybe set the context, right? And then acknowledge maybe the experience that they have and then ask them the question. So in Ari's case, I can't remember verbatim exactly what I'd asked him, but I was trying to set the tone with his preparation and his background in Toastmasters, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, I remember him revealing to me with his preparation, he had cardboard cutouts of the sharks that he was talking to, which was absolutely incredible. So I try to do this now so that when I'm developing a question is to have a question so that you have a better probability of getting the right answer up front. It doesn't always work because sometimes, if you remember our past international, Pat Johnson, we both love her dearly, how she loved to go off on bunny trails in her conversations. And she blamed me and you for asking such great questions, such questions that required thorough response, let's say. How doing this helps the guest is that you're already giving them a lot of context so that they can already pull from their experience. Because sometimes when you ask someone a question, they're not necessarily sure where to start. The other thing, again, it'll improve the quality of the answer. And then what's happening is you're already setting a little picture for the audience so they know what to expect. It seems to work most of the time.
This is reminding me of a couple of things that I picked up from you that you do really well. And one is, as we would always get together before an episode to do some planning and to kind of compare notes on questions. You have a real knack for, I guess, going deeper than the obvious. Like sometimes I'd have a question that you would say, well, that's, how can we make this more interesting? So this point of digging deeper, the other place I see this come up is, I don't know if you know this example. It's kind of the old joke about, you know, how Abraham Lincoln was shot in a movie theater.
Yes, yes.
Historical context. So I think I'm doing it right now, by the way, Greg, with a historical reference. There's this old joke about making reference to people not really paying attention or listening of, oh, well, Mrs. Lincoln, besides that, how was the play? You're familiar with that anecdote. Point being that sometimes people will give an answer that is just begging for a follow-up where I might then rush to the next question and you're like, whoa, 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 like, wait a second. I want to double tap on that and ask a follow-up.
Well, it's interesting because I interviewed Dr. Allison Wood Brooks. We had two episodes and it was about asking questions and she had talked about the power of the follow-up question. Sometimes the follow-up question is actually more important. So I encourage you to listen to both of those episodes. I'm going to have to look up the episode numbers. I should know those. I'm not sure who came up with this, but it was something along the lines of sometimes the right answer is not necessarily the best answer. And I'm not sure where I originally got that from. So sometimes when I hear a question or sometimes I hear an answer or a comment, I ask myself, where else, you know, where else can this go? Remember our conversation with Mohamed Qahtani, the 2015 world champ?
Totally, yeah.
He had shared at the last moment, and that's, of course, the great thing about us interviewing the world champs is that we get to hear a lot of the extra stories behind the scenes. If you recall, he changed something at the last minute in his speech. Yeah. Now, of course, the world would not know unless they had listened to the podcast. And of course, I jumped in right away and said, what was that question? What did you change? That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But sometimes things go off the rails, right? Remember episode 172, Confessions of a Podcast Host.
Oh, that was so fun. Yeah. And much like this episode, I really enjoyed, as much as I absolutely love speaking to guests, those episodes when it was just you and me or you, me, and Bo reflecting back or talking about lessons. Those were always really fun. But anyway, back to this episode you just cited. What were you going to share about it?
Well, I remember we interviewed Judy Carter, who... Judy Carter's a comedian, and of course, she didn't hesitate to take pot shots at us. I remember I had purchased a MacBook, a newer MacBook, not the Pro, it was just the MacBook, and it only had one port on it. And I remember I had plugged my microphone into a dock. You and Judy were having a conversation. My microphone went to sleep because the dock sensed that there was no data going through it. We lost connection. We got a disconnection. And then she comes out with, Greg, you better get rid of that $10 Radio Shack special. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I recall our conversation with, I believe she was an equestrian, Deborah.
Yes, Deborah McAlexander. I'm looking at it now. That was episode 169, Vision Beyond Eyesight.
Do you remember where we, messed up?
I confess that I don't recall. What was the mess up there?
We couldn't figure out why we couldn't hear her, why the audio wasn't working. And we went back and forth trying to get settings all set up. And then she had said to us, she said, well, I use this giant screen and I close my MacBook cover. And we figured out that the reason we couldn't hear her was because she was using the built-in mic on the computer. And so when she closed the cover, the mic sound went away.
It was muffling the microphone. Yeah.
It was muffling exactly.
Right. Yeah. But we managed to figure it out and it ended up being a great episode.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, I know we touched on this already a little bit, but are there other ways that your communication has evolved as a result of all of your experience podcasting and speaking to so many different guests from different walks of life over the course of many years now?
Well, Ryan, my continued journey in Toastmasters and hosting the podcast, personally, I think has really supercharged my skills. I'm still not an expert. I'm a lifelong learner, and that's why I continue to do this. And of course, occasionally we flub and trip over our words, which that does happen. The butterflies have changed. When I first joined Toastmasters, the butterflies were all about the lack of confidence. Now the butterflies are just sort of that little bit of fear of forgetting. And then every once in a while, you have a little bit of an imposter syndrome where you might have an interview that doesn't go as well as expected. But then I have to remember Maureen Zapala, when she talked about her dot. This is my dot. I know my dot.
Yeah. Can you flesh that out a little bit for our listeners?
It was episode 267. So Maureen describes our expertise as a dot, if you remember that, when she presented for her accredited speaker designation. Mm-hmm. She said that she suggested that we say, I'm proud of my dot. I have a cool dot. So when imposter syndrome surfaces, you're reminded of that dot. In that moment, you're feeling this insecurity. But if you think about all the experience that you have in the past, when I think about, okay, well, this interview didn't go that well, but if I look back and I go, well, Greg, you've done like hundreds of others and those went quite well. This is just a little bit of a blip, and you just need to sort of own it and say, you know what? It's okay. you're certainly going to get through it. As far as lessons go, I have learned so much. When you're talking about preparing for a speech, you need to think about the audience ahead of time, right? And then the message that you're going to take away. But in podcasting, it adds this other dimension to it. And the analogy I like to use, it's like a GPS. You're going in a certain direction, you're trying to get to a certain destination, but the path can change. Right. You may ask someone a question and sort of expecting the answer to go in a certain direction, and it ends up going somewhere totally different.
Oh, road closed.
Yeah. So at that moment, you need to decide, okay, are we going to go in that direction? So you turn left, you see road closed. Are you going to turn right, or are you going to go back where you came from?
Right.
Right. So you want to decide, okay, the destination is there, but where you're going can depend on where the discussion leads.
Yeah. I love that analogy.
So for example, when we spoke to Robert Navarez, a lot of the focus was on his dad, but then when he started talking about his own experience and having to speak to people whose families were victims of violence, the conversation took a different direction.
Yeah.
That's a skill that's really important, because if you're having a conversation with someone, or maybe you're in a meeting dealing with a client, right? You need to be able to decide, okay, I have my list of things that I'm going to do. Do I continue down that path, or do I shift direction? And the thing is, you're constantly course correcting, because you're asking yourself, especially when we're having these conversations, when you and I were co-hosting together, we would have our little notes that we would go back and forth. Okay, we've gone here. Do we want to go here? Where do we want to go next? And so we're always thinking, okay, what my guest saying, is it resonating with me? If it isn't, you want to shift directions. Is it clear? Do we need any elaboration? Maybe someone gave us an acronym. Is it an obvious acronym? If it's a Toastmasters acronym, okay. If it's not a Toastmasters acronym, maybe we need to get them to explain it. I guess if I needed to summarize that part, it's like, you need to become more adaptable. You need to be aware of situations, and you need to know how to drive the conversation. Sometimes it goes smoothly. Sometimes I'll just stop in mid-sentence and I'll just say, okay, I'm not sure what direction this is going, or maybe perhaps I'm misunderstanding. Or if I flub something, I'll just say, you know what? I flub. Can we start this part again? Maybe the question wasn't clear. I'm also comfortable now, and I wasn't before, in saying to a guest, well, maybe let's consider a different approach. But I'm also the first one to say, well, you know what? I messed up. The other thing that I've learned is that, and I sort of alluded to it with the GPS, is not to necessarily stick to a plan. So for example, you've got a list of 6 or 7 questions. If you find that conversation goes in a different direction, you need to shift. What I discovered, and we talked before about curiosity, is that I started to understand that the best conversations don't necessarily come from, hey, Greg, that was a great question, but it comes from the curiosity and willing to be open with the individual. And so I began to see my role less as someone who is just simply asking questions, and to become more of a story builder. Try to help build a story so that at the end of the conversation, the audience has something to take away.
Right. And they feel like they've gone on a bit of a journey. There's been an arc to the conversation. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
Well, Greg, you shared about some of your standout episodes and standout guests. I'm wondering, who would be your dream podcast guest if you could get anyone in the world to sit on the other side of the microphone and have a conversation with you? Who would that be?
Well, if we were talking about someone who I could, if there was someone dead or alive, unfortunately, my dream interview would probably be with the late Steve Jobs, the creator of Apple. I had an opportunity of meeting him on 2 occasions. I even spoke to him for maybe a minute and a half many, many years ago. But if I had to pick someone who is alive right now, it would be the artist Christa Berg. Christa Berg is known for Spanish Train. He is known for Lady in Red. And the reason I'd want to interview him is, first of all, I love his music. But I recall back during the Legacy program, I was a Toastmaster, I believe, for less than a year. And I had to do the project on vocal variety. And I couldn't think of what to write about. And I happened to be listening to the radio, and the song Spanish Train came on the radio. Mm-hmm. And Spanish Train is it's written in the form of a story. And Christa Berg is known for his stories. And I remember going to my mentor asking if song lyrics could be used to illustrate vocal variety. And he said he really didn't know. So I thought that I would recite the song using vocal variety and giving some explanations. And then I thought, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'll get suggestions for improvement, I will. And I really found that his music has these most incredible stories. And one of the things we learned is the power of storytelling in Toastmasters. And so I would love to be able to interview him and ask him how he develops his stories, how they come about, you know, what is he thinking about, trying to just pull back the curtain, which I believe is one of your cliches you always used to like to use. That would probably be my dream.
Oh, very interview. Cool. Yeah, I love that. Do you remember, I know it was a while ago you gave the speech, but do you remember some of the lyrics to that song and the type of inflection and energy?
Oh, absolutely.
Would you give us a taste?
There's a Spanish train that runs between Guadalquivir and Old Seville. And in the dead of night, the whistle blows. And people fear he's running still.
Nice.
There's an interaction further on between the Lord and the devil playing chess, and the devil, was it the devil? He had three aces and a king, and the Lord, he was running for a straight. He had the queen, the knave, the nine, the ten of spades. All he needed was the eight. And then it goes on and on. And the devil shouts, my hand wins. That's about all I'll go into it.
Greg, I've never, as long as I've known you, I've never heard that type of delivery from you. I feel like you could have a future in, I don't know, spoken word or something like that. Very cool.
Well, yeah. I can put a link to the episode that there's actually a video, YouTube video, and a Toastcaster podcast episode that has me delivering that project at my club.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I even got the audience to do the whoo, whoo. and I sang the last piece at the end, and I end up with...
And the audience went, whoo, whoo.
Well, I asked the audience if they wanted to participate, and it's like people are going, like, no, you're not going to have me singing. And I said, no, there's a train in the episode, and all you have to do is go, whoo, whoo. Like I would pull my hand down like a train pulling the cord.
Right.
Yeah, so that worked out quite well, actually.
Wow. Well, your reference to the S word reminds me of a text that I got from you a couple of weeks ago. You said that you were on your way out the door heading to an activity that I know was inspired by one of our former guests. Can you share a little bit about that?
Oh, Jillian Mitchell. I interviewed her recently about music to help with your speaking voice and your speaking confidence. And she had me sing a little bit on the episode, and I was so inspired, and I love doing karaoke, that on Facebook, one of the people in our community was putting on a group singing class. So I decided to sign up for it. It was five classes, just an hour on late Sunday afternoon. And I went for it. So far, so good.
Are we going to be seeing you on Canadian Idol anytime soon?
I don't think so.
No. Well, you have been on another stage, though, since we last connected. Share a bit about the TEDx event that you participated in.
Oh, that was phenomenal. Our community, there's a small town called Devon just outside of Edmonton, Alberta, and they had put on a TEDx. And I was contacted by the organizer, Mark Hain, and he said, I would be honored if you would be the MC for the event. It was mind-blowing, just being able to prepare for that, doing the introductions. It was a wonderful experience. And it really put all my Toastmaster skills into play. I'm hoping one day, perhaps, I might do my own TEDx speech.
Oh, very cool. Well, I have to say, hosting a TEDx, having attended a TEDx before, that is no small job. There's a lot of weight to that, to keep the audience engaged between the speakers, make smooth transitions. I can imagine there must have been a million details to manage and things to remember. So that's very cool you had that opportunity.
It was a phenomenal experience. And if anyone has an opportunity to do that. And also just a reminder, recently I interviewed CC Espute and she had put on a TEDx for youth. We interviewed her. I think that was episode 297. So that's another episode that you might want to check out. And I'll certainly put links to show in the show notes.
Super. Speaking of episodes, what's the best way for folks to stay connected to the podcast, to hear the back catalog of, as I said before, the body of work at the Toastmasters podcast?
Yes, these are my memorized lines. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And they are also embedded with the related article at the magazine.
Fantastic. Well, Greg, it appears that the memory is still working sharp. You got the delivery in just fine. And I just want to thank you for the honor, the opportunity to come here and be part of this 300th episode celebration from you. This has been really great. I'm proud of everything that you've done and just super happy that you've continued the legacy here all the way to 300, and I'm looking forward to episode 400 in the not too distant future. I see what you did there.
No, thank you, Ryan. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor, and I'm very, very grateful of having had the opportunity to join the Toastmasters podcast team, and I want to continue to deliver the best possible episodes we can. And of course, kudos also go out to the incredible folks at the Toastmaster magazine that provide the most incredible content, which is very helpful in terms of creating the basis for a number of the episodes. Of course, I will go out and do a lot of other research, learn more about the guests, learn more about the articles, but having that source content is absolutely incredible. And again, you can find the article, The Toastmasters Podcast Reflecting Back, How a Simple Podcasting Project Developed into an Incredible Journey, in the June 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Ryan?
Fantastic. Well, Greg Gazin, thanks so much for letting me come back to your show. And as the official host of the podcast, I'll give you the final word.
Well, first of all, thank you, Ryan, for being the guest host. I do greatly, greatly appreciate it. And of course, I also have to put a shout out to all the listeners that are out there, all the feedback that you share. And because without you, our listeners, there's no reason to have a podcast. So thanks so much for tuning in and stay tuned for episode 301.